Shalom. You're about to hear a message given by Rabbi Loren Jacobs of Congregation Shema Yisrael, located in Bloomfield Hills, Michigan, USA. For more information, you can go to our website, shema.com, shema.com.
All right, we're going to do something a little bit differently this morning. Instead of me giving the drasha, the message, in a formal way like I normally do, Rebbetzin, Martha, and I are going to together read and discuss Proverbs chapter 1. And maybe if we have time, part or all of Proverbs chapter 10. We'll see how it goes. We're doing this because this is one of the things that the two of us do together at home. We read Proverbs together. And when we are with Martha's brother David, the three of us will read and discuss a chapter of Proverbs. I really like reading, discussing, analyzing Proverbs with Martha and with David. I like it more than me just reading Proverbs by myself, because Martha and David bring their insights and their perspectives to our discussion, and they see things that I don't see. So it reminds me of the proverb, as iron sharpens iron, so one person sharpens another. Since there are 31 chapters to the book of Proverbs, we will often read the chapter that goes with that day. If, for example, it's April 6th, we might read the 6th chapter of Proverbs, April 15th, tax day, the 15th chapter, the 29th day of Proverbs, Proverbs 29, etc. Some people will read through the book of Proverbs every month, familiarizing themselves with this collection of wise sayings and absorbing the great wisdom that is there. How do we read Proverbs? Slowly, thoughtfully. We analyze each proverb. We consider different circumstances that apply to that proverb. We consider different people that we know of who fit that proverb, both good examples of them fulfilling that proverb and bad examples where they did not fulfill that proverb. We learn from their examples, from their success or from their failure. Why should we read the book of Proverbs? Proverbs is about wisdom. We are born into this world ignorant and foolish. We come into this world lacking knowledge and lacking wisdom. Proverbs helps us gain knowledge and wisdom. Why should we read Proverbs? Because this world is a dark, confusing, dangerous place. And Proverbs gives us wisdom to navigate this dark, confusing world. Because a fallen world will tell us to do foolish, destructive, harmful things. Proverbs helps us to discern those foolish, harmful things and counteract that. We read Proverbs because there are many different and confusing and dangerous messages out there that are constantly being communicated. We need truth and wisdom found in a book like Proverbs. Why should we read the book of Proverbs? Because knowledge is good. Because knowledge is power. Because wisdom is good. Wisdom is so beneficial and adds so many great benefits. Why should we read the book of Proverbs? Because it is possible to grow in wisdom and knowledge, and because it actually becomes fun to grow in wisdom and knowledge. It's like a game. It becomes fun seeing into various situations, knowing how something is going to turn out before it happens, because you understand God's principles, whether they're being implemented or not implemented. It becomes fun, enjoyable. Why should we read the book of Proverbs? Because these proverbs are short, and they tend to be easy to understand and very easy to remember. Martha and I have read Proverbs over and over again, and each time we read the same chapter that we've read before, it comes out a little bit different. We have new insights, new understandings. So to me, it's like free-flowing jazz music. A little bit different every time, which makes it interesting and fresh. How do we read Proverbs? We can read it as an individual. It's great for individuals to read on their own. We could read it as couples. It's good for husbands and wives to read it together. It stimulates conversations about issues the couple may be experiencing and helps them apply God's principles to that situation. You don't have to be a married couple. You can have a friend read a chapter of Proverbs with you and discuss it. And we can read it together as families. Reading Proverbs together as a family brings the family together, discussing a wide variety of practical and spiritual topics from God's perspective. Wise life lessons. Why should we read Proverbs? Because our culture is post-Christian and very often now anti-Christian. 60 years ago, the culture was supportive of biblical values and biblical morality. The schools, the media, the government encouraged wise living based on biblical principles, but no longer. These damning words of Rabbi Paul now apply to our culture. Although they knew God, they neither honored him as God nor gave thanks to him. But their thinking became futile and empty, and their foolish hearts became darkened. Although they claimed to be wise, they became fools. That's us. Our culture is no longer wise. And we and our children and our grandchildren need to get wisdom from sources outside of the culture. We need to get wisdom directly from sources like the book of Proverbs. Why should we read Proverbs? Because they are true. Because they are wise. Because the book teaches us about God and about morality and the importance of good character and wise living. And that God and wisdom and morality and successful living are all connected. Because the book of Proverbs has very practical advice and also very spiritual advice. So it helps us live a balanced life between the practical and the spiritual. Why should we read Proverbs? Because it helps parents teach their children about God, morality, good character, successful living. And this is something that parents are responsible to do for their children. And I'm going to make a recommendation that our families here at Shema read Proverbs with their children at least once this year. Pick a month that has 31 days, so you get all 31 chapters. And mom and dad, it would be great if you would set aside time each day for 1 month to read the book of Proverbs with your children. I think you will find that extremely beneficial. So, Martha, why don't you come up here and join me? And Martha, we're not going to use that.
Looks like it's on, right?
Yeah.
All right. So this is what Martha and I will do at home. Usually I'll have a nice cup of hot coffee, and Martha will too, but we didn't have any coffee this morning available. And we always start off with a prayer. So Martha, why don't you pray, and then I will pray as well.
Okay. Let's just move this. Lord, I thank you for giving Lauren this creative idea and the daring to break from tradition. And I pray that you will bless this time as we look at Proverbs 1, the embodiment of your wonderful, rich wisdom.
Amen. Lord, thank you for this book of Proverbs. Thank you for the wisdom that it contains. I pray that as Martha and I read from Proverbs chapter 1, we would be wiser individuals. And I pray, Lord, that the rest of us could benefit by our discussion of this amazing book. And I pray this B'Shem Yeshua. Amen.
Amen.
All right, Proverbs chapter 1, verse 1. Why don't you follow along if you have a Bible? And generally, we'll take turns switching off reading, but I'm going to do most of the reading for Proverbs chapter 1 today just to facilitate things. Verse 1, the Proverbs of Solomon, the son of David, king of Israel. Not all of the Proverbs were written by Solomon, but this opening section was, the majority of the book was. And Solomon was considered rightfully one of the wisest men who ever lived. He was a great king. He was the son of King David, one of the greatest men who ever lived. So he had the advantage of having David, this amazing builder and warrior and poet and prophet, as his father. And so Solomon was able to benefit from his father and receive great wisdom, which he is able to transmit to us 3,000 years later, the Proverbs of Solomon, the son of David, king of Israel. And then verses 2 through 6 give us the purpose of Proverbs. To know wisdom and instruction, to discern the sayings of understanding, to receive instruction in wise behavior, righteousness, justice, and equity. Well, let's pause there. Martha, any thoughts on that first part?
Not particularly.
Well, notice the key words, wisdom, instruction, understanding. We need knowledge. We need instruction. We need core knowledge. Because we're born ignorant, and so knowledge is good, knowledge is power. Wisdom is knowledge that is applied according to God's wise principles. You can have a lot of knowledge, a lot of information, but not have any common sense. You could have a lot of knowledge and be very foolish, right? So we want instruction, we want knowledge, we want wisdom, we want understanding. And notice in verse 3, that wise behavior, righteousness, justice, equity, these are moral attributes. You cannot separate wisdom from morality. A lot of people try to make that mistake, that you can have, you know, be wise or smart or successful without being deeply moral. You cannot. We must be living righteous lives. We must be just and fair with God, with other human beings. That's really important. Verse 4 continues to give prudence, which is another word for wisdom, to the naive, and to the youth, knowledge and discretion.
Okay, I really love this, that God is making it very clear that this book is not just for adults. It really is for the youth, and that youth can become wise and knowledgeable. You don't have to wait till you're grown up.
The naive are those without, you know, who are simple, who don't have a lot of knowledge or information. So this book will help them increase in knowledge. Verse 5, a wise man will hear and increase in learning, and a man of understanding will acquire wise counsel. So it's not just for youth.
But it also says you never stop learning. I really like that. Life is not to ever become dull and boring. No matter how old you are, you're never supposed to stop learning.
So a wise man will also benefit. He'll hear an increase in learning and acquire wise counsel. And verse 6, to understand a proverb and a figure, the words of the wise and their riddles. There's a lot of interesting information out there. There's all kinds of information, voices out there, messages out there. But this book will help us become wise and figure out the true good messages from the real wise, from the false messages of those who are not wise. So they will help us understand a proverb, a figure, the words of the wise, and their riddles.
And I think this underscores what you said in your introduction about it being like a game, a puzzle to figure out. And here it is, the words of the wise and their riddles.
Verse 7 gives us the theme of the entire book. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Fools despise wisdom and instruction. So, you cannot separate wisdom from religion, wisdom from God. It's the fear of the Lord that is the beginning point of wisdom and knowledge and instruction. You must know that there's a creator God. You must start with God himself for the world to make sense, for life to make sense, for life to be successful. You must know that there is a God, and it's not just intellectual knowledge that there is a God. You must have Yirat Adonai, the fear of the Lord. You must know that this God is a person. You must know that this God is powerful. You must know that this God punishes the wicked and rewards the righteous. You must have a good, healthy fear, respect, reverence, awe for him. That must be your starting point. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge.
And if respect for God is the beginning of knowledge, then the reverse is also true, that you need to automatically filter and not completely trust the knowledge that you hear from anyone who does not respect God, because they have knowledge, but it's mixed with other stuff that's not trustworthy knowledge, like knowledge that comes with respect for God.
The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. You must start with the fear of God, knowing God, respecting God, honoring God. But there's a lot of people, fools, who won't do that, and they wind up despising wisdom and instruction, not wanting to apply God's wise principles, not wanting to learn, not having a teachable attitude.
I think we see that played out everywhere in the media. It's hard to find a TV show or a movie where the Christian character isn't cast as a bigot or a buffoon.
So this is foolish people despising wisdom and instruction because they are mocking
biblical values and biblical morality. And our culture now, I would say, is characterized by fools despising wisdom and instruction. All right, that's the theme, verse 7. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Then the next section is about not taking the easy way, the moral, ethical shortcuts in life. Hear, my son, your father's instruction, and do not forsake your mother's teaching. I like that because this tells us that it's an essential part of both parents to give instruction to children, mom and dad, moral instruction, spiritual instruction, practical instruction. Hear, my son, your father's instruction. Do not forsake your mother's teaching. Indeed, they are a graceful wreath to your head and ornaments about your neck. If we listen to wisdom, our lives are going to be better off. This is compared to a graceful wreath on your head, beautiful ornaments about your neck. You're going to be prettier. Your life is going to be prettier. You're going to be better off.
And children who have a mother and a father working as a team are the ones who get this wonderful benefit.
Verse 10, my son, if sinners entice you, do not consent. If they say, come with us, let's lie in wait for blood, let's ambush the innocent without cause, let's swallow them alive like Sheol, even whole as those who go down to the pit, we shall find all kinds of precious wealth, we shall fill our houses with spoil, throw in your lot with us, we shall all have one purse. Martha, your thoughts?
Well, the invitation starts off, come with us. There's this offer for companionship. That's the enticement. That's the seduction. Come on, you know, you'll belong. You'll be with us, and we'll be friends.
And what's wrong with that?
Because what their friendship is around is really destructive and ungodly.
So choose your friends wisely. Just because someone offers you friendship, your friendship needs to be based on something good and wholesome and not something that is dangerous and seductive and wrong. That's not a good friendship, right?
Yeah, and here they're really looking to... wealth is the goal, and it doesn't matter how you get there, is their value. That shortcuts are okay because the bottom line is precious wealth.
And Proverbs is going to teach us that acquiring wealth is okay, but you got to do it in God's way. There's wise ways to become wealthier through hard work, through discipline, through saving, through investing, not by taking from others, by using force, by using coercion. Right?
Yep.
Verse 15. My son, do not walk in the way with them. Keep your feet from their path. For their feet run to evil, and they hasten to shed blood. So don't go that way. Avoid them. Don't be quick to use violence of any kind.
They justify, they get to that point because they justify any way getting to their goal of wealth.
Verse 17, indeed, it's useless to spread the net in the sight of any bird, but they lie in wait for their own blood. They ambush their own lives. So are the ways of everyone who gains by violence.
It takes away the life of its possessors.
But they don't see that. It doesn't look that way to them, and it often doesn't look that way to us. It looks like, if you're looking just at the circumstances, that they're really getting ahead in life, that they're really accumulating wealth, and that their ungodly ways are working. It doesn't look like they're ending in ambush or...
They see themselves as successful. The world sees them as successful because that's what the world focuses on, is the outward things, your status, your wealth, how much money and wealth you have, but not from God's perspective. And another really important point, and the point is that when you harm others using violence, being a taker, not a giver, you're not just harming the other person, you're also harming yourself. You're really hurting yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You're damaging something within your soul when you harm others.
And that reminds me of the New Testament verse that tells us that the one who gains the whole world but loses his soul, and that's the person being described here.
So it's not worth it to go after easy money, to take moral, ethical shortcuts, to cheat, to steal, to use violence, to accumulate wealth. It's wrong, it hurts others, and it really damages yourself. People don't understand this, though. A bird, you know, that spotted the net, you wouldn't put a net in front of the bird because the bird would see it and avoid it. These people don't realize that by taking these moral, ethical shortcuts, they don't see the net that they're laying for themselves.
Because the birds are smarter.
All right, so we need wisdom. We want wisdom. It's such a great thing. And the next section tells us that wisdom is readily accessible.
Mm-hmm.
God has designed the world in such a way that there is wisdom in a lot of places. And God wants us to become wiser men and wiser women, wiser boys, wiser girls. Wisdom shouts in the street. She lifts her voice in the square. At the head of the noisy streets, she cries out. At the entrance of the gates in the city, she utters her sayings.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I like that wisdom is personified as a beautiful woman.
Mm. I didn't see it that way.
Wisdom is personified as this beautiful, attractive woman, she, not he. And this is common in Western civilization, that great ideas, great virtues are personified as a woman. Not just wisdom, but also Lady Justice. When justice is portrayed, she is always portrayed as a beautiful woman. And, you know, she's blindfolded, so she's not looking on the outward things and playing favorites, but is valuing things fairly and justly. Lady Liberty, right? The beautiful concept of liberty and freedom, the Statue of Liberty, beautiful woman. Here we have wisdom, which is so wonderful, so beneficial, should be so attractive to us, portrayed as this beautiful woman.
I love that God makes sure his wisdom is not hidden. It's available. It's out there. The streets and the square is where all the people are. And the noisy heads of the street, so it's where, you know, the big cities, the entrance of the gates in the city. And so he makes sure that there's always a testimony, there's always a witness for those who will have ears to hear. I also like that, you know, I think of all the places that we hand out tracts and talk to people. It's in these places, at the busy city squares or the Ann Arbor Art Fair or downtown, you know, in the city.
Thanksgiving Day Parade.
So
God makes his wisdom available, you know, where he goes to the people. He wants them to become wise, and that's a good strategy for us, too.
Exactly. And I also like that it kind of contradicts the message that it's okay to quietly live a godly life. That's enough of a testimony. Wisdom shouts in the street. She lifts her voice in the square. Wisdom uses words. She is not silent.
So don't just wait for people to see how wonderful you are, what a godly person you are, and ask you a question, why are you so godly and wonderful?
Exactly.
Go to them, open up your mouth, try to teach them about God and the ways of God and salvation.
Speaking the truth in love, that's wisdom.
Okay. And here's wisdom's message that she's crying, verse 22. How long, O naive ones, will you love being simple-minded? How long, scoffers, will you delight in scoffing? And fools hate knowledge. Well, I see three different categories of humans here, three different kinds of human beings. Naive, simple people, that's category one. Scoffers, who make fun of and mock God and the things of God and the Bible and biblical morality. That's a second category. And then there's fools who hate knowledge, hate God's divine principles, ignore them, won't implement them.
Those are the ones, don't confuse me with the facts. I've made up my mind.
So we have wisdom is calling out for naive ones, simple ones, to learn, for scoffers to stop making fun of the things of God, and for fools to embrace God's wise principles. Verse 23, turn to my reproof or correction. If you do, I will pour out my spirit on you. I will make my words known to you. We must humble ourselves. We must receive correction. We come into this world proud and arrogant, especially when it comes to God. We think that we're in charge, that God is not that important, that what he wants is not that relevant. We must humble ourselves. We must be willing to receive correction from God, reproof from God.
And I see this as an ongoing precondition to being wise, being willing to humble ourselves, because we never stop needing reproof. We never stop needing correction. And unless we're willing to humble ourselves and receive correction from whatever source God sends it, we will not be wise.
But not everyone will come to wisdom, which is so readily accessible. Verse 24, because I called and you refused, I stretched out my hand and no one paid attention, and you neglected all my counsel and did not want my reproof. So that seems to be a hint that the majority of people will not listen. Will not receive correction, will not humble themselves, will not become wise. There's consequences. I will laugh at your calamity. I will mock when your dread comes, when your dread comes like a storm and your calamity comes like a whirlwind, a tornado, when distress and anguish come upon you. There are consequences for ignoring truth, for ignoring wisdom, for an individual, for a society.
And there's a timing, too, because we have a window to respond to God And when we don't, and calamity hits us, that's not the time that we can turn to God and he's going to be sympathetic, seeing that this calamity is a consequence of the choices thus far.
Well, calamity, it's hard to think straight. If you're in a major crisis, you don't have the time often or the ability to really think through what you want to do. And so being in the middle of a crisis, a calamity is not the best time. You can wait too long. And that's what verse 28 says. Then they will call on me during this time of catastrophe, but I will not answer. They will seek me diligently, but they shall not find me, because they hated knowledge and did not choose Yirat Adonai, the fear of the Lord.
So those who were seeking in their calamity were seeking for release from their troubles, not because they wanted to come to God on his terms.
They were feeling the consequences of punishment and just wanted relief rather than being sincere about really turning things around and coming to God on his terms. But also the idea that you can wait too long. Don't wait until you're in the midst of this catastrophe to try to get things right. It might be too late. In other words, get wisdom now. Seek wisdom now. Verse 30, they would not accept my counsel. They rejected all my correction. So they shall eat of the fruit of their own way and be satiated with their own devices. Reminds me, what you sow, that shall you reap.
But it also reminds me in 1 Corinthians where the unrepentant sinners that were put out of the church or excommunicated for discipline with the hope that they would be disgusted in the end of their ways, that they would be satiated with their own devices.
Thank you for listening to a message by Rabbi Loren Jacobs of Congregation Shema Yisrael, located in Bloomfield Hills, Michigan, USA. For more information, you can go to our website, shema.com, shema.com.